Calculating what energy might cost us, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Great to be back with you again, Barry.
It's great to be here with you, too. Well, Chuck, we were talking yesterday about comments made from a senior White House science advisor on climate change, Daniel Schrag, who's a geochemist and heads Harvard University Center for the Environment. And basically, he said something that was somewhat breathtaking, but it follows right along the heels of the president's speech at Georgetown University in the afternoon on Tuesday, where basically he says that one thing we really need to do is just begin the process of shutting down the conventional coal plants. And you brought up the point yesterday that, well, that process really has already begun through the massive amounts of regulatory red tape that has been placed upon that particular industry. And one of the things we didn't even talk about was previous administrations and their regulations regarding scrubbers and high sulfur coal and those type of things and costs that have been involved. But that's going to make what the president is proposing now with the EPA on the coal industry is going to make the Clinton era EPA regulations regarding low sulfur coal and emissions and scrubbers on the stacks of these power plants look like it was just a walk in the park. And this really, I believe, many of these new policies, which, you know, are still in their infancy because, well, and let's not kid ourselves, they're already drawn up. It's just the EPA and the administration have to figure out what the best political timing is for rolling them out on the industries. And I believe that given this speech that the president made, they've calculated. And of course, the New York Times article that we referenced to, which is called Obama to Outline an Ambitious Plan to Cut Greenhouse Gases, written by John Broder on Tuesday, already said that this speech, the scheduling and the timing of this has been planned for weeks. And so this is a production number, Chuck. And it's interesting that how this comes about right around the time that the administration's got everything falling in their laps, from Benghazi to NSA spying to drone planes to, well, the list goes on and on.
Well, it is a classic redirect. There's no doubt about that. But the fact is that he needs something to draw attention away. And what better way, honestly, is this guy? I mean, he doesn't have to run for re-election. So essentially, making people mad about something else at least gets their minds off the worst thing. And I think that's what he's trying to do. If I can get him mad at me about this. But then again, I think he really thinks that this is something important that needs to be done. And that's what's really scary about this. This isn't just a payoff to, I really think that he believes in this global warming business.
Yes, well, and it's interesting because in the article, there were quotes from David Hawkins, who's the director of the Climate Center at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Now, if that isn't a socialist front organization, I don't know what it is. But he's like, basically, oh, this is a moment that's been 20 years in the making, and we're encouraged by these proposals. And of course, Andrew Steer, the president of the World Resources Institute, who also was a top official at the World Bank, called this initiative extraordinarily important. The point is that Barack Obama is trying to push the United States into compliance with the Kyoto Treaty without actually ever signing a treaty, United Nations treaty. He's just going to be doing it by executive order and executive agency regulation making. So basically, we're going to have all of the climate controls and all of the emissions controls that were going to be mandated by the Kyoto Treaty, which Congress and the American public rightly stood up against and opposed and shouted down. But Obama's not going to be stymied by this. It's interesting that they quoted 20 years, Chuck, because that takes us back to the Rio Climate Summit, the United Nations Summit in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, in 1993. So, yes, they're right. This has been 20 years in the making, and Barack Obama is their man for the time, and he's going to use executive orders and administrative rules to accomplish what couldn't be accomplished by treaty law.
And there's the bottom line. That's what's going on here. This president has a strong proclivity to bypass the Constitution.
Yes.
Now, we've had that problem in this country since, really, probably since around 1861. And if you can remember who was president then, and I'll give you an example, the suspension of the writ of habeas corpus. Barry, in the Constitution, who has the power to suspend the writ of habeas corpus?
Congress, right?
Congress.
Yes.
Not the president.
No, not the president. Most people think it's the president, but it's not. It's Congress.
No, who did it in 1861?
Oh, that'd be Lincoln.
Yes, the president.
The president at the time.
And this has been going on, and presidents have been bypassing and ignoring the Constitution now for a long time. It's now reaching its culmination, where essentially what we have is a king who issues decrees, and now we're even finding out that essentially we're beginning to have star chamber proceedings, and perhaps we need to expand on that momentarily. A star chamber is basically a secret court that issues decrees that no one knows about, and people simply disappear and are hauled off to prison and are tried in these star chambers by unusual circumstances. And in fact, if you look, a big hunk of the Bill of Rights has to do with your legal rights in court. Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment, Seventh Amendment, Eighth Amendment all have to do with court trials. And the fact is, they were designed to eliminate the idea of the Star Chamber, and the Star Chamber was started by Henry VIII's father, Henry VII, and it was continued up through until Charles I lost his head. And actually, I think until James II was run off in the Glorious Revolution. That completely ended the Star Chamber, but they really eliminated it during the Revolution in England. Now we have it back. This is the kind of thinking that this president does. He believes himself to be this potentate, this emperor. And he uses this power to his advantage. Whatever he wants to do is A-okay. Because after all, if you recall, very early on, he was doing a number of these things and people were critical of him. He goes, but we won. We won the election. That was his excuse. And some commentators will now, if you look at it, they call him the One, W-O-N.
Yes.
They nickname him the One. And that's because of that comment. We won, and therefore we can do anything.
Well, not so fast, because regardless of whether or not he's going to try to bypass the Constitution, one of the things that he can't necessarily bypass, unless they allow it, is bypassing Congress's check on the executive. It's in our Constitution that Congress has the ability to override a presidential veto on a piece of legislation. But there are also some other things that Congress can do, which I think the vast majority of the American people don't realize, that when he issues a ruling or executive order, they can pass a resolution basically negating it. And the same holds for any federal agency, including the Environmental Protection Agency. Anytime they promulgate a rule, there is a process of congressional review. As a matter of fact, it is mandatory. It's Section 801. It's Title 5 of the United States Code, Chapter 8, Section 801, the Congressional Review Act. And it basically says, before a rule can take effect, the federal agency promulgating such a rule shall submit to each house of the Congress and to the Comptroller General a report containing a copy of the rule, a general statement related to the rule, including whether it's a major rule or not, and all these EPA rules will be major ones, and the proposed effective date of the rule. Then they have to give a copy of the cost-benefit analysis, the agency's actions in relation to promulgating the rule. They also have to comply with the Unfunded Mandates Reform Act. And then in each chamber, the House and the Senate, will go to the goes to the standing committees under the rules to basically that deal with those executive agencies. So with the EPA, that's the House Energy Committee, and I think it's the Senate Energy Committee as well, who will basically review the rule. And if Congress passes a resolution barring the rule from taking effect, they can't enforce it. They can't pass it. And this is applicable regardless, notwithstanding any other law that's on the books. I mean, it's specifically in the Congressional Review Act. This chapter shall apply notwithstanding any other provision of law. So our Congress, Chuck, could put the stop to Barack Obama's complete disregard for anything in our Constitution that prohibits him by basically using the Congressional Review Act against his agency. I know we're asking a lot of our Congress.
Well, look, all you have to do is watch what's going on with immigration reform.
Yes.
To demonstrate that basically there are a few with a spine and most are spineless. Basically, there are people who should be on the side of the angels on this, but who aren't, and it's out of fear. They've been told you'll never get reelected unless you pass this thing. And so basically what they're going to do is so few of them understand this issue from a control standpoint and from what it's actually going to do to energy availability and to the economy. Let's not kid ourselves. These regulations, we are not humming along as an economy. A friend and I were talking about what the real current inflation rate is. They're telling us, like, what is it, something like 2%, 3% or something really ridiculous. If you take it back to the way inflation was measured during the Carter administration, for instance, that includes energy and housing and fuel costs, we're at somewhere around 11 or 12% inflation. In other words, double digit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
These are the facts. So cutting all these things out and then saying, look how bright and rosy the inflation picture is. Uh-uh. Why do you think the stock market's at 15,000? It really has nothing to do with the health of the companies that are on the stock exchange. It has to do with the fact that there's inflation and the prices are increasing. Well, increasing prices mean the cost of everything is going up.
That's right.
So we've got a potential mess on our hands, and basically, we are an economy that has never really pulled out of the last recession. I keep hearing that we're in recovery, we're in recovery, we're in recovery. Well, things are a little better than they were in 2009, only a little. And you do this, you yank the rug out and increase energy costs by 25, 35, 45%, you watch what happens. Local restaurants will go out of business. That means that there's no place for waiters and waitresses and cooks and dishwashers to work. And of course, the people who own the restaurants will be out looking for work that won't be there.
That's right.
That means that local places like the hardware store down the street, you won't be able to do the housing maintenance that you want to do. Places like Lowe's and Home Depot and Menards and all your little local shops, you're not going to spend money there because you don't have it. If you want to cool your house or heat your house, you're going to have to lay out to the power company. And who are you going to blame? Well, the chances are, Barry, this is the sad part. People will blame the power company.
Yes, they will. That's exactly what will happen.
No. Blame your government.
That's right.
Because all the power company says is there's no power on the grid. Okay, economics 101. When you cut supply and increase demand, what does that do to the price?
Oh, well, it immediately goes up.
Exactly.
It has to. There's no other way.
And these guys really think that somehow they're going to defy price, cause, and effect. And the politicians know that the power companies are going to get labeled as the bad guys. Well, the power companies are not the bad guys. And the climate freaks are all going to say, well, it's good because we're going to put a stop to this climate change. Look, CO2 doesn't really do hardly anything to climate change. The major factor in climate change is cloud cover, and that is caused by the combination of solar activity and cosmic radiation. And there's nothing, zero, nada, that we can do about that. Because the amount of cosmic radiation hitting the atmosphere is dependent upon the sun, and that's the real bottom line, and we have no control over the sun.
At least we hope that our Congress never figures out control over the sun.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I can tell you there was a scheme in the mid-90s that they were actually going to launch a giant curtain to shade the Earth from solar radiation. And we were going to launch it on satellites, and they were going to deploy this thing. And I'm like, this is rank idiocy. And yet this is an actual proposal. So all you can say is that our scientists are nothing if not imaginative. And I'm sure that there were millions in government grants handed out to people to give them seed money they needed to do the research, to research this giant curtain that they were going to throw up over the Earth. So,
well, maybe we need a giant curtain over the Barack Obama administration. Maybe that would help.
Yeah, well, there's already a pall cast over it, so maybe that's what we should do. But we are out of time. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.